You're listening to Drop of Inspiration, a Young Living podcast. Join me for leadership lessons, conversations with Young Living influencers, and an inside perspective on our company. I'm your host, Celeste Rosenloff. We're thrilled to have Mitch Seavey, Young Living brand ambassador, and Iditarod champion with us today as our guest. In March, Mitch won the Iditarod race with the best time ever and remains the oldest champion yet. At 57, Mitch is faster than ever and keeps winning races against younger competitors, including the 2017 Iditarod, where he broke the old record by a full 8 hours. He's won this challenging race 3 times in the last 13 years and is the first and only living musher to complete the original Iditarod Trail in its entirety from Seward to Nome. Mitch is a true example of being young at heart and continually challenging yourself. In between Mitch's busy race and training schedule, I caught up with him over the telephone from his home in Alaska. All right, so first of all, congratulations on your win at the Iditarod.
Thank you.
I understand that you broke the record by 8 hours while competing against people in their 30s, right?
Well, the competition seems to be getting younger and younger while I stay the same. So, actually our son Dallas, who has been a multiple time winner, came in second this year. And I believe he's 30 years old. Third place was in their 30s as well. So, they look at me as an old guy for some reason.
Well, as long as you don't feel like an old guy, right?
You're still doing it.
So I wanted to know a little bit, how are you feeling about your recent victory? What's that been like?
Well, in some ways, it's just a confirmation of all the hard work that we've done. And we're pretty excited about it. And it's, it's like, well, yeah, we should get our share of wins, all right, with as hard as we work and as high quality of operation as we have and the team that we have. But at the same time, getting it done is just amazing, and such a journey and such a year-round project. And so even, weeks later, we're still sort of pinching ourselves. And my wife, Janine, and I will look at each other and say, can you believe it? So it's been a wonderful time after the race.
Yeah, I can only imagine once you've put in that much hard work. And actually, I was curious if you could give us a brief overview of your history with dog sled racing, kind of give us an idea of how you got into it and how far you've come.
Well, my history with dog sledding goes way back to, I was very young, and my dad, Dan Seavey, we lived in Minnesota, and he wanted to move to Alaska and do dog sledding. So we came to Alaska in 1963 for that purpose. And I was a little kid and pretty much started in with my dad running dogs as much as a little kid can right from the beginning. So that's been well over 50 years ago. My dad ran the Iditarod in the early years, in the early 70s, was one of the pioneers that helped invent the Iditarod, if you will. Ran in the first couple of races in 73 and 74 and on through. So I've run dogs all those years. I've run the Iditarod, I guess, well over 20 times, and many, many other races in Alaska as well. And dog sledding is our year-round occupation and passion. We do sled dog tours in the summer. We do expeditions in the winter. We train and race in the winter. So dog sledding is what we do pretty much my whole life.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I knew that your son was a dog sled racer, but I didn't realize that it also was that it is so multi-generational. That's incredible. And I understand that your son Dallas too, he is also a record breaker. And I wondered if you trained with him or like currently, and if you swap tips before a race or whatever. But I guess too, I'm wondering about, the history with your father too. Like, is that something you guys trained together, kind of, help each other out? Or what does that relationship look like?
Well, of course, years and years ago, I grew up, but obviously in my dad and mom's place and with my dad's kennel. And so I learned a lot from him, but as time's gone by, I've had, kind of the main kennel, if you will, in the family. Of course, then Dallas grew up here with us and helped me train. In fact, he was my main handler when I won the first time in 2004. And so, you know, in his 20s, then he was a highly experienced competitive racer. Now, Dallas has his own kennel some 5 hours away from here and has had for years, and won the Iditarod in his own right for the first time in 2012. With his own kennel, you know, married kid, you know, moved away, grew up and all that, you know. So the relationship with my father is, you know, of course, very close. And I think he's one of my biggest fans. So he definitely enjoys when we do well. And Dallas and I are best friends and very competitive. So it's sort of comical how we talk about dog sledding all the time and try not to tell each other anything. So there are certain questions are just off limits and certain answers you can tell aren't really true. And, you know, so it's a lot of fun, and we're super excited about each other's successes and want nothing but the best for each other, except that unfortunately we have to compete. So it's a great close relationship among all of us.
Yeah. That's gotta be really fun though, too, like to compete against family who, you know, yeah, sure, one of you is going to do better than the other, but at the end of the day, like, you all get to spend time together celebrating one another's accomplishments, right?
Like, we do, and you know, we get to have something like this that's such an all-consuming project that we participate in, and we have that in common. So we always have something to keep us close.
Yeah, that's great. That sounds like a really incredible and lucky kind of relationship that you guys have been able to foster. Moving into your training, I'm wondering, what does a day of training look like for you? It's year round, right? So just does a day in the life look like?
Our training is year round. So, you know, starting in the spring, literally 3 weeks after the Iditarod race is over, we start training again for the next one. And so we aren't doing the hard training like you do when you're peaking for a race, but we do maintenance runs on the team all summer. And many of our dogs, in fact, most of our dogs are involved in our sled dog tours and dog sled rides that we do. So they're working, earning a living all summer long. The main core of the race team, however, is sort of on what we call protected status. They don't have to go do the tours, but they stay in the Sterling kennel, and they're doing quite a bit longer runs during the summer. So that training goes all the way through the summer. And when the weather cools down so that the dogs are able to do, you know, even more work, then we jump up the distances, and eventually we're doing 50 and 60 mile runs. And then we just start grouping those runs together. So we'll do two in a row, three in a row, four in a row, those kinds of things. And the vast majority of our training is done in what we call simulated racing. So we just go out for hundreds of miles and literally pretend we're running a race. We practice being on the Iditarod with the running and resting and running and resting. And just so folks know, we don't really stop like overnight and build a fire and put up a tent and all that. When we stop, it may be 2.5 to 4 hours, take care of the dogs as quickly as we can, maybe lay down for 45 minutes, get up, put booties back on their feet, hook them up and go again. So that's a around the clock activity. And so training is much like racing in that sense. And so that's how we do it.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So you are going on like those overnight runs, even when there's not a race.
Absolutely.
Happening.
Yeah. That's the main way we train. And we'll go for like literally a week at a time. And then you could think of it as week on, week off. So we'll be pretending we're on the Iditarod, for lack of better terminology, and for a week. And then we'll have a week off where we regroup and take care of equipment and get some sleep and rest up, and the dogs rest up, and then next week we go again.
Yeah. Now, I actually wondered, you said you have a core group of racers.
Yes.
Can you introduce them a little bit? I would love to just like get an idea of like, you know, who is running these races with you?
You're talking about my core group of sled dogs or my people?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I was talking about your dogs, but yeah, your people too. I'm sure they play an equally important role.
Well, absolutely. There's seven or eight other people in the kennel that are helping me, but there's, you know, over 150 dogs. And out of those 150, there's roughly 25 to 30 each year. Well, this past winter we had 30 that we are working with to be on the A team. And those guys are ones that are, they're, the youngest would be 3 years old, and they've come through the puppy training, the yearling training, where they just learn to run and be sled dogs as yearlings. They do up to 40-mile runs, and they might do 2 40s in a row with a camping trip so that they get a little bit of an idea of camping when they're yearlings. As two-year-olds, they run the Iditarod with what we call the puppy team, and those guys train up and run the Iditarod at a much slower pace, hopefully finish in, you know, 40s or 50s in the pack on the Iditarod. And that's our kind of our junior varsity. And then out of that puppy team, we select the best ones to move up to my end of the yard, so to speak. And that's how we have then this 30 dogs that we work with, adding those young guys to my existing core, and then work with them for the next year's race. So we have kind of a young group right now, and I think the oldest is 7, and probably 6 or 8 of the new coming in 3-year-olds will be also in that training group. So they're already fairly experienced by the time I get them and start working with them.
That's a lot of moving parts to keep track of, and it seems like it really allows you to have a dynamic team.
Yeah, it really does. And I don't have any rookies. And so part of that is by the time the dogs get to me, I have really high expectations. I mean, they've been trained fairly. They've been brought up. They're fully mature. Their bodies are fully mature. And at that point, you know, they're not, if you use human terms, they're not junior high kids. They're not high school kids. They're college grads and they're pro athletes now. And they can be expected to be tough and mentally ready. And they really are.
That's so interesting. I didn't realize that it was such a big operation. I mean, I had an idea it was, you know, it was a pretty good scale, but 150 dogs, that's a lot of little paws that are working
Yeah. And as I've already commented, you know, 30 are working for me for the A team. Uh-huh. There's another 20 that are in that puppy team. There's some yearlings, but honestly, because we do sled dog tours, in the summertime, we have quite a group of dogs that I would say are just tour dogs.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of them are my old buddies from racing teams gone by, and and they can run a few miles and they can give people rides and they can help train the puppies and things like that. So I guess in all sincerity, I have probably more of those dogs in the yard than a lot of people do. And we have a good use for those dogs that aren't just quite top quality race dogs.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about when you're actually racing, but training too. It sounds like since, you know, you have a pretty intensive training schedule and regimen. I'm wondering when you're out on the trail, you know, there are a lot of challenges that you have to face. And I'm wondering how you've managed to overcome and even thrive in those situations.
Well, there's all sorts of one-liners that could be thrown in there about, you know, your brain being frozen so you don't know what's going on, or you can't tell how cold you are because you're numb already or whatever. But I think truthfully, a lot of it is just getting used to the environment and, you know, in the conditions that we work in. I've been doing it literally all my life. And so it sort of becomes an expectation. It's not a frightening thing to me to be cold or to be tired or whatever. That's kind of a normal circumstance. You know, we do condition ourselves, and so there is a gradual building up. But, you know, people talk about how hard the Iditarod is, and it really is. But really, that's what we do all year long. So the Iditarod is only just, you know, actually one more 1,000 miles of doing what we've already been doing. So there are challenges and situations, but I guess when it just becomes second nature, there's challenges and things that people deal with, you know, all the time in other areas too. So it's hard to be specific about that, but it's just what we do. It's what we're used to. I've been doing it since I've been 4 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there is something there though, with like setting your expectations, conditioning yourself to be at your optimum level of performance despite those challenges, and then that persistence of training and that consistency too, right? Like,
well, there certainly is that, and you know, there's just I say to folks fairly often that, you know, in order to win the Iditarod, you have to do 1,000 things right, and you just can't cut corners, because, you know, obviously somebody else is going to be doing it a little better or a little more intensely. And so, right. So there's a consistency of training. There's the years that have gone into developing the kennel and developing the genetics. I think I can say without embarrassment that we have the best sled dogs in the world for what we're doing. And that's been many years in developing. So I rely on that. But there's also a synergy between myself and the dogs. And I think it's something that maybe other folks who have working animals, whether it be dogs or horses or what have you, but you can appreciate that kind of back and forth where they feed off of my energy and I feed off of their energy. And it becomes a dynamic where neither one of us is going to let the other one down. And when you're running dogs thousands of miles a winter, you know, and they're giving their all, I would be embarrassed to let them down or to not do the right thing or to not, you know, not get up on time or not do my best. And so in a way, I feel almost accountable to my dogs. It's like, you guys are putting all this out for me. I'm not going to be the weak link here. And so there's a lot of motivation that comes from that and, you know, from the energy that the dogs put into it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's certainly something to be said about building your team, right? Like making sure that you all work well together and you know what each of your roles are for sure. Now, switching gears a little bit, you know, you've been training with Gary Young for the last few months, and I'm wondering what that's been like, kind of a unique opportunity.
Well, Gary has jumped into dog sledding with both feet, and, you know, kudos to him for that. And he came to the kennel, I believe, you know, New Year's Eve was our first conversation about it. And in January, we worked together and got him in and through two mid-distance races. He now has dogs in Utah at his ranch that he's been training and practicing with as well. And so he's doing his best amid all of his other obligations to learn and get better and be a student of dog sledding. And I think it's been a really rewarding experience for him. We also did a trip, a 250-mile trip on the Denali Highway after the Iditarod was over and, you know, figuratively the dust had settled, so there was more time. And I was able to work personally with Gary one-on-one for those several days, and it was a really rewarding time, I think, for both of us. And it was beautiful springtime weather, so it was a wonderful, wonderful trip, and another opportunity for Gary to get some sled time and some runner time, and get used to the dogs. So it's been quite a time, and it's interesting to get to know Gary on a different level in a different way, and I think I can say, at least speaking for myself, that you know, we've become really good friends through all of this.
Yeah, that's it. Seems like just he's really enthusiastic about it and going right for it. So it's pretty cool to kind of watch the progress of both of you guys, you know, and seeing like you this, you know, world-class athlete, like, mentoring, you know, someone who is just starting out in this. It's neat. So,
right. Well, we do. And of course we do a bit of that, not that it's on the same scale with what Gary's doing and, you know, getting his own team even and things like that. But, you know, a lot of young people come here and I guess Gary and I both think of ourselves as being young. So there you go. But, you know, a lot of folks come here and we teach them how to run dogs, either handlers or even guests and so forth. So it's a good environment for that. And the interesting part, though, is that Gary and I are, you know, working together so closely on this. And it's been a real rewarding time for me. I count it as an honor and a blessing to spend time with him. And I hope he feels the same.
And then I am wondering, you know, in addition to all the work you put in beforehand and the years of training and all that, you know, as a Young Living brand ambassador, I'm wondering which products you rely on in the race.
Yeah, of course, with a whole kennel full of athletes, meaning my sled dogs and me, we have opportunity to use a lot of the products. But for myself, I guess my favorite products are the MindWise and the Ningxia Red. And I use them daily. And I think there's just tremendous benefits that I've gained from them. And I also, of course, when you're doing these long, crazy schedules and long hours, the Ningxia Nitro is a mainstay. That's sent out on the race in all of my food packs on the trail, and just to help me stay alert while we're going through these crazy schedules and things like that. The packets of Ningxia Red are out there on the trail, and it really becomes something that I really look forward to, getting to the next resupply point and getting into my bags and getting out the Ningxia Red. Especially for some reason, I really crave that when I'm when I'm on the trail. Of course, you have to put it in your inside pockets to thaw this stuff out, because it all freezes on the trail. But
it
works well.
It turns into a slushy.
Yeah. So, and then I have, you know, I've always used a number of the essential oils. That I think frankincense is remarkable. I really like, and I've used that for many years, but in the last few years, and particularly since I've become a brand ambassador, I've become really fond of Shutron. You know, other mushers on the trail report that they can smell us coming or smell the Shutron after we go by. So it's an interesting trademark, but there is a certain cohesion in the team. I think a lot of it centers around the scents and the smells and the benefits that they derive from essential oils. And remember that dogs have a sense of smell at least 1,000 times more keen than ours. And so these odors and things are so much more identifiable to them. And they really kind of rally around those oils that we put on. We also use for the dogs... the Animal Sense ointment is excellent for maintaining their feet through all those thousands of miles. There's literally millions of footsteps being taken by these sled dogs. And we do use booties on their feet when there's difficult, you know, harsh snow conditions, or when we're running on dirt a lot in the summer and fall. But the Animal Sense ointment works really well on their feet. And so these are some of the favorites for the dogs, for sure.
Yeah. And then I just have one last question for you, and that is, you know, what is next? What are you working toward? What's your next step?
Well, I'm standing in front of my window as I'm speaking to you, looking at my kennel, and the guys are out there hooking up these yearlings, and they're the ones that will be in the puppy team this upcoming winter. They'll be turning 2 years old, and boy, what a bunch of phenomenal looking athletes they are. So, you know, I'm always looking forward to when this next wave of these really great athletes is in my team. And what's next is I intend to do this again next year and the following year and the year after that, and continue to be as competitive as I possibly can. And, you know, the age thing is bantied about, because I am the oldest person to win the Iditarod. And the first time I did it was in 13. I was 53 years old, and this year I'm 57, which I guess some people think that's getting up there for this sort of a sport. But I feel like I'm a better dog sledder right now. I'm a better musher than I've ever been. So why would I do something else? So unless something comes along and, you know, hits me upside the head that I really become a lot more interested in, I intend to keep doing this for a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you have a great team in place and upcoming. So you go have fun with those yearlings and get them in a place where we can see you running next year too.
Right. Well, great. We're excited about it. I think we're in a great position, and we're also honored to be representing Young Living, and we get a lot of response from folks about that, and in connection with the dogs, people are really interested in it. So it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for taking the time to chat with me, Mitch. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, thank you very much.
Have a good one.
Yep, bye.
Thanks for joining us on Drop of Inspiration. Until next time, I'm your host, Celeste Rosenloff.